As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hello and welcome to From the Ricker End, a Watford podcast brought to you by The Athletic. Watford have just won away on a Friday night, 1-0, away at Derby County. I'm joined by Mike.
Good evening. Hello.
And Jason.
Hello there.
And let's talk about the game. This is the classic game, Mike, where I think over the last 5 years, I've sort of looked at the, you know, you flick onto Sky Sports, it's Friday night, it's a championship game, you go, geez, poor. This is terrible. But it wasn't an amazing game of football to write home about, generally. But for Watford, how did you feel coming out of that game?
Definitely not one for the neutral, and I've got no problem with that whatsoever because obviously we're not neutral and we want Watford to win these games, which they've done. And I think, for me, that is the archetypal Vladimir Ivic performance, if we can say that. Yeah, I mean, it's only the fifth. Is it the fifth league game of the season? It feels like this season's been going on for about 6 months, and that was only our fifth league game of the season. But I thought the bottom line is Watford defended incredibly well, looked incredibly well organised, one beautiful moment of quality, won it. Game over. See you. We'll do it again next week.
Won't be next week. It'll be midweek.
Well, it'll be Wednesday, yeah. See you twice next week. Yeah. So, yeah, for the neutral, absolutely not much to get enthused about. You know, Caroline Barker and was anchoring the Sky footage and was sort of almost a bit apologetic at halftime, wasn't she? But, yeah, I thought for Watford it was absolutely... terrific isn't the right word, but it's terrific in terms of where we need to be for our season.
We'll talk about this game. We'll also talk with Adam, the Watford correspondent for The Athletic, and find out what happened today in this last day of the transfer window. But Mike, you know, I'm not going to lie, there was excitement with myself, with the Watford fans, when it seemed to be that Watford have kept hold of a few big players. Kapu is staying, Deeney is staying, Zara is staying, Hughes is staying. There was a huge amount of excitement. And then the team came out, and I'm not going to lie, it felt like almost the worst case scenario we could possibly have for our squad. So I wasn't expecting a lot, but I wanted to see what almost in my feelings was the worst case scenario team we could put out.
I think my work after 10 years, my negativity has finally rubbed off on you all. I can retire a happy man. You're all as miserable as me. Worst case scenario. But I know exactly what you mean. I'm pulling your leg, of course. And I have to admit, when the team came out, I felt a little bit deflated. And then I kicked myself back into gear and said, actually, look at this side. It's a decent side. And I think we're just exhausted after the transfer window, right? I think me in particular, I don't want to speak for everyone, but I just felt so tired by the whole thing and I just wanted it over and done with. And we've said a lot that our season starts tonight. And I kick myself a little bit for saying our season starts tonight, because of course it didn't. We were coming off the back of a international break, and we're blessed enough to have players that were out on international duty, and it's also the end of the transfer window, so there was always going to be the stuff around that. So really, to expect our fully formed team to sort of pop out of the chrysalis tonight was foolish on my behalf. And so yes, I had that initial, the same thing that you described, that initial sense of disappointment. Oh, when are we going to see our first 11? And I thought, actually, hang on. As I said at the start of the pod, this is only the fifth game of the season. It's a tumultuous situation, unprecedented, very, very difficult, a tightrope that everyone's had to walk through. We can be patient. So yes, there was that initial disappointment, but then you look at it and that's where we are at the end of this transfer window, with a decent side. And this is a very decent Championship side that took to the field tonight and did a really decent job on Derby County and came away with 3 points. So yeah, really pleased.
Jason, let's talk about that first half. It wasn't, as Mike's already said, the most talkative and not the greatest for the neutrals. But as you know, looking at Watford, how they played, overly conservative for you?
Maybe not conservative. I thought maybe more predictable than anything else. Predictable by the fact that most of our attacks were coming down the left-hand side. I think we were looking to utilise Kiko Femenia's pace, but then also the fact that Ken Semmer was that round peg in a square hole, in that he was forced to play central midfield, but we were actually utilising the fact that he can get wide. And to be fair to him, I think he was the one player that was looking to take people on and trying to get past them. And he did do that. And I thought we did that quite well, even though Derby would have been wise to it quite quickly. We still got into threatening positions, but then the problem was the final delivery, the crosses weren't good enough. I think it was more about the decision where to put the crosses rather than any lack of technical ability. And the same came from the set pieces as well. There was a lot of not being able to beat the first man. And I think that probably added to our frustration as much as anything.
Because that's my thing, like, Jason, looking at the game, everything was going down the left. And my question is, great, we're trying to use the pace of Kiko and the pace of Sema. But why also not down the right? Is there anything you think particularly was a problem with any square pegs and round holes on the right hand side?
Not necessarily. I think if you're going to focus the attack down the left hand side, then the right hand side is going to be more defensive. But I think also the way that Derby were playing, perhaps that led to Ngakia not being able to get forward as much. Mm-hmm. He was certainly holding back. I think he was stopped from being able to sort of get up the line. It meant he was always having to look inside quite early and sort of playing a square ball to Cleverley or Chalobah. It also meant that Keenan was a bit isolated. So whereas his role probably was to try and get forward to support Pedro as much as he could, there was a big gap between him and the rest of the midfield. So I'm not sure if he knew whether he was meant to be or having to drop deep to try and get the next ball. Obviously, Ngaki wasn't going up the line, so he wouldn't have had an out up there either. I think there were times where the ball was being played, more longer balls were being played up to him, and he didn't have anyone to give the ball to. There was no chemistry between him and Pedro tonight. I thought there was the link play wasn't there. So it was not necessarily Keane's fault, but I think it was a struggle for him. But then also the way Derby played as well. I think Geordie mentioned on our WhatsApp group that Rooney's touch map was very focused down their left-hand side. So Ngaki had to help out, look after him. Then I also thought the young lad, Jason Knight, had a good game on the left-hand side. And perhaps it was telling that when he moved over to the right for Derby, when Lawrence came on, I think then Ken Semmer moved over to our right and Gaki had a bit more freedom to get forward a lot more.
I think it was interesting. I mean, we've been quite sort of dismissive of the first half. And John, I'm interested that you say, was it cautious, conservative, the word you used? And I think we need to get used to that. Watford are well organised, well drilled, defensively strong, and I don't think that necessarily means conservative. I think it means less chaotic, probably, and it's something that we're not really used to, isn't it? Over our Watford supporting careers, really, just to see a team so well drilled as this. And I actually, it's a rare feeling, this, for me, but for the first sort of 20, perhaps 25 minutes, I felt Watford were just in charge of the game without looking, like you say, without looking too flashy or exerting themselves too much. They were making all the running and they did look like the better footballers and the better drilled, the more organised side all over the pitch, I felt. And that did sort of drift a little bit towards the first half wore on. But I don't think this side is far from looking pretty decent. And we ended the first half potentially with a penalty shout, didn't we?
Well, there was one before the first half and there was one after. But yeah, let's talk about those penalty decisions, Mike. Well, we'll hear later on when you speak to Arlo that he definitely thought they were penalties. No spoilers.
A very miserable Arlo. A mental note to myself. Never interrupt Arlo watching a Watford match. He did not take too kindly to that at all, as you'll hear later in the podcast.
Yeah, what a tight turnaround on a Friday night game. But it was both, clearly, for me, penalties. Is this the first situation you found yourself in going, God, I wish we had VAR?
Never. No, I think it's nice not to have it. But they are penalties. I mean, Tom Cleverley for the first one looked absolutely incredulous, didn't he, that it wasn't given. And every time you watch it, the more it looks like a penalty. The guy just puts his hands on him and pushes him down. It's that age-old phrase, if it happened in the middle of the park, it'd be a free kick every single time, not even 9 times out of 10.
What? Yeah, Cleverley got the wrong side of him, didn't he? Got in front of him and he was there and the defender knew it and had to act. Yeah. And did act and got away with it.
Yeah, blatant pen. And then for the second one, it was a great save. simple as that, wasn't it? Hands out and cleverly again later in the game as Derby piled on the pressure a little bit. He blocked, but he moved his body in a way that was to keep his arms and hands out of the way of the ball, and that just wasn't the case early in the second half from the Derby guy, was it? His hands were out from the side of his out of the side of his body. Great save, definitely stopped the ball on its intended trajectory and should have been a penalty. I will caveat that with it's very difficult to see as a referee. There's bodies in the way and it happens at a million miles an hour. So it's difficult to get those right. And I guess they are on the side of caution without VAR. But yeah, two penalties that Watford should have had. Interesting. Here's a question for you then. Who would have taken him?
I was wondering that. Yeah, I'm not sure. I wonder if Kiko would have taken it.
Oh, I was going to say, wouldn't it just fall to either who got the penalty or Pedro?
It's an interesting one.
Because he's the only striker. And you always think it would go, if Deeney was on the pitch, Deeney would get it because he's a penalty taker. But I think either it defaults to whoever got the foul or just Pedro. But anyway, we don't have to worry about that. It didn't happen. And we won the game without the penalties. The bit, I suppose, I got to a moment about 65 minutes in, just after 60 minutes. I'm looking at it thinking, okay, I don't think we've been here before. We've been at 0-0. And we got that in the West Sheffield Wednesday game. The other games, either we've been behind or we've been in front by the hour mark. And I'm going, okay, well, what is it? What's he going to do? How's he going to act? Is he going to throw someone on? Is he going to, keep defensive and just see if he can get a possible goal? And then also in 76 minutes, João Pedro scores a goal that we've dreamt of João Pedro scoring. It was a beauty, wasn't it, Jason?
Absolutely, there's not much more to say. And an assist for Ben Wilmot as well, which I was just as delighted with. And that's because the way we play, we talk about how solid we are defensively and we're playing with three at the back. But we also know that we allow the outer centre-backs to move forward, to roam forward, to try and make something happen and unlock defences. Because otherwise, if teams match you and set up in the same way, it's going to be quite hard to unlock their defence. And we did that by putting that extra man up there. So that worked. So that was a joke about Ben Wilmot getting assists, but it's good to see it. It's what we were trying to do to unlock the defence. But yeah, it took a moment of magic. And I think you sensed it was going to take either a moment like that or a mistake from someone. And it was just brilliant and fantastic for João Pedro. Talked about after the Luton game about him needing something, a bit of luck maybe to get a goal just to increase his confidence. And we said that he is a confident player and he's been happy to put himself about. But this, I think, will just raise his confidence another level to be able to score a goal of immense quality like that. Keeper hadn't been tested by us all game. And then we've stuck one in the far corner where he can get nowhere near it. Absolutely brilliant from the young lad.
Yeah, it was. And you could, like you say, Jace, I think that that's a really important point aside from the goal. You could see the release and the delight that, that João Pedro had, just sort of roaring with happiness as he sort of sped off after scoring. I mean, it was just a fantastic goal. And that's the João Pedro that we've hoped we signed, isn't it? And that, that could be the difference for us going forward, just that little bit of quality. I think that's the basis. That is the archetypal Watford performance, I think. Say, stay firm, stay solid, stay well organised, and then work on the basis that we've got that flair up front when you get the opportunity. They will come in this division. You will get that little bit of extra space. We gave them a little bit of extra space a couple of times as well. So, you know, Rooney could have scored later on. But we have got the quality up top for that to happen. And it was just, yeah, I mean, I'm sure we all did this. It's just that roar of like, oh, yes, what an amazing goal. Just the way he manoeuvred his body, controlled the ball and just arced it into the top right-hand corner was absolutely joyous. And that's what Watford can do. Stifle you at the back, force you into sort of running around, making mistakes, and then hit you with that. And yes, we're not doing it, you know, every 2 or 3, 5, 10 minutes. There's not chances. Like you say, Jace, we're not peppering the goal. But We are seeing a lot of the ball. We are looking very firm. And I suspect we are awful to play against. Really frustrating, I'd imagine, because you probably feel like you're vaguely in the game, but we didn't really give away any chances until later in the game, did we, when Derby were going forward a little bit more and they made a few substitutions. But yeah, just a wonderful situation for João Pedro. So pleased for him, and hopefully he can kick on.
He's definitely João Pedro 1, Wayne Rooney 0. There was a moment early before the game started, all the graphics, and you know, we are of an age where Wayne Rooney is younger than us, and you know, knowing that we watched him when he was 12 or whatever it was, when he played for Everton the first time round, you know, this 16-year-old, and then you see a picture of Wayne Rooney now next to João Pedro, and you think, you look a bit old there, Wayne. the years have not been amazing to you. But he showed his flair. He showed what he still has in that locker. And he was, for me, the only danger that they sort of had in there. He did have his chance, one-on-one almost, but Cavaselli got his foot in. And it just went a bit wide, which was a relief to us.
Not a relief to the sound guy, though, at Sky.
No, he
thought
it wasn't.
He got in because he hit the goal, didn't he?
Yeah, but also I think the other sound guy didn't take the volume down enough, because there was a slightly rude word there from Mr. Rooney, which is not surprising.
I was going to say about that chance as well. I thought that was quite telling about Troostekong's debut, because they didn't see a chance like that when he was patrolling the middle of the back three. Not a sniff did they have sort of going through the middle, and then all of a sudden he's off and Cabaselli's in there, and not to diss Cabaselli in any way, but all of a sudden Rooney's found some space between Cabaselli and Wilmot, and say he had the chance for the equaliser. So just thought I'd raise that.
I think that's right, Jason. We talk about what a great defensive performance, as if it just sort of kind of happens. It's like, oh yeah, the defenders did their job, but they were really, really good. And we spoke about the potential Watford penalty in the first half with the defender getting the wrong side. I thought Ben Wilmot was terrific on a number of occasions where he just stayed the right side, didn't he? And they're all just doing the sensible, the right things really, really well. And that's difficult because you have to stay switched on. You've got people like Rooney buzzing around and strikers who's an attacking player's whose sole intent it is to bamboozle a defender or to buy a bit of space to get the other side of you. And to stay switched on for 90 minutes is difficult. So we've sort of bandied it around a little bit, saying, yes, we've defended very well. We've conceded one goal in the league so far in 5 games. That really does take some doing. So I think you're right. Hat tip to Troostekong on his debut, but also across the piece, it takes some doing, and I don't think we should take that lightly. It's been really impressive. It's great.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Well, luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer, if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
From the Rookery End, a podcast about life following Watford FC.
It It gives me great pleasure to welcome once again to Michael Parkinson. It's Arlo. Arlo, how are you doing?
Good.
A bit annoying because I'm interviewing you during the match. I'm disrupting your viewing. It's Friday evening. Watford nil, Derby nil so far. What do you think of the game so far?
Dumb.
Dumb? Why dumb?
There's a clear penalty.
There was. You're probably right. But never mind. Let's move on to happier things. It's the end of the transfer window today, Friday. Troy Deeney and Ismail Assar both staying at Watford. They haven't moved on during this transfer window. How do you feel about that, and how does that change how you think Watford might do this season, Arlo?
Better, but I still think we'll stay in the Championship.
Oh, you're not as positive as you have been in previous weeks. Why not so positive?
I don't know. I'm not sure, actually.
But you're pleased that Troy's staying?
Yeah.
Pleased Assar's staying?
Mm-hmm.
A message for the team, then? Can you give them something a bit more positive?
Keep going and never give up.
All right, mate. Sorry, I'm distracting you, aren't you? Aren't I? So thanks very much for joining us, Arlo. Enjoy the rest of the game. I'll leave you to it now.
Thanks. Bye.
Today, we did hear the closing of the window. I don't know if that was a Windows 95 computer or if it was Windows NT, but it was closed and we are now having a Watford squad. We tweeted on at Watford Podcast, a little graphic I put together. I think it's all factually correct, of what we're left with. But what we were left with, Mike, especially after today and this week even, we're left with Etienne Capoue, Will Hughes, Troy Deeney and Ismail Assar. These are players, and we'll speak to Adam about actually why these players are still Watford players in part three. But that was quite a surprise, for John a month ago, maybe not John the last week. But yeah, that those boys were there, and yeah, they're still Watford players.
I'd surprise for me, and I think the reason that I mentioned earlier has been so tired by this transfer window is it's felt like everything's been players leaving Watford, hasn't it? Players that we either had high hopes for leaving, or players that we knew could do a job leaving. And I think the fact that we've hung on to, well, for whatever reason, I think it's important to recognise that they are now part of the Watford squad and we're going to move forward, at least for 10 weeks until the blooming window opens again. It's a brief respite, isn't it? But I was surprised as well. And looking at the squad now, Ben Foster in goal. We've talked about defence. A midfield, we've got almost an embarrassment of riches really now for the Championship, and an array of sort of striking talent, which when fit, we've got a lot to choose from. So it really is a strong-looking squad. And I know there's a little bit of disquiet about not bringing in a left-back, but we've got Messina to come back. We've got Kiko Femenia, who's played tonight, who, you know, he's a Premier League, he's a top flight player, isn't he? And Ken Semmer can fill in there. So I think really, as Watford supporters, last time we were in the Championship, if we could have had a squad that we've got now, we'd have been very, very happy. So I'm glad it's over, and I think I'll take the next 24 hours to really compute and get to grips with what we've ended up with and what this squad can do. And then I think really, Wednesday night at home to Blackburn, who have had a decent start and a decent side. They've made some signings of their own. That'll be the start in a lot of ways. And I have to say, I'm really excited. I think we've got a great coach in Vladimir Ivic, and I think we've got quality throughout the squad. I think we're in a position to give it a great go.
Bloody hell, Mike.
I know.
No. I've got the television on still. Oh. It's on mute. And your face comes up on it.
How do I look? Did I get my good side?
Well, they look like some nice filters on you. That's all I'm going to say. Jason, though, you know, this we talked about this on our WhatsApp group. You know, we are going to be, in many ways, if we have the full strength side, the envy of the Championship. And is that because of flair, or do you think it's because of experience?
I guess the first thing that the opposition are going to see are the names, and they're probably going to be fearful of the names, and that sort of happens when we published our squad numbers, and we knew there were a lot of names on there that weren't going to be on the team sheet come today at 5 o'clock. But the reaction then was, we're cheating. It's not fair. And even now, if you look at the players that are left, the likes of Capoue and Hughes and Deeney and Assar that haven't played today, it, for a Championship side, that is incredible. That is, and amongst those names, there is experience, there is flair, there is promise, there is excitement. it's amazing to think that that we've still got them to come into the side, and yet we're still winning games comfortably, if not by by massive scorelines. And on that note, going back to the start of this piece, John, a hat tip to your knowledge of Windows operating systems. You know that I work in IT. Thank God. And I was having a conversation about our performances so far with a colleague. And when I read out our scorelines to him, he congratulated us on the achievement of getting a nice set of binary numbers for our scorelines.
Here you go, then. Let's be super geeky. If Watford were an operating system so far this season, which operating system would they be?
Oh, Jace.
That's a good one.
Linux.
could be, yeah, a bit off the beaten track, non-standard,
open source,
but a open source, popular choice, Ubuntu. There you go.
But this, what we're left with, Mike, and how you feel overall. You know, we know we've talked about this, you know, this situation we find ourselves in as a football club, and as a footballing family and community, you know, in the football league. You know, are you satisfied? Does it feel like we've done the work to keep players, or we've done enough work to bring players in?
I think the really important thing to recognise is just what a difficult situation this has been for football as a whole, but definitely Watford. We've spoken about this before, but getting relegated this year is problematic. So there's the whole economic issue going on out there in the world. The face of football is changing, as we've seen with the various suggestions about Project Big Picture or whatever it's called. So we're all painfully aware that there are issues with football and financing football and the wider world. So this has been a very, very difficult transfer window for everyone, but definitely for us. So I think for us to have navigated that and ended up with a squad, which I think really we'd be churlish of us not to be happy with, speaks volumes about the organisation of the club, and that we're going now into that, certainly this next section of the season, up until the next transfer window, with a squad that I think will do us proud. There's enough to be excited about, and they're gonna be challenging. I think that much is clear. I think Ivic is a great manager who's obviously worked really well, and there is talent in every section of the pitch, and I think that's testament to the owners, to those that work at the club, to have manoeuvred us into this situation. You'd like to think that they wouldn't make any. They're quite pragmatic. I think they're not going to take any gambles with wages and salaries and transfer fees. So you'd work on the basis that the squad we have, we can afford, and I think that's really important. I don't think we should gloss over that. Gino Pozzo and Scott and everyone else involved at that level are trusted guardians of the club. And I don't think we should underestimate the tightrope they've had to walk transfer window. You know what I mean. And I think to end up where we are is good, exciting, and we're ready to go and in decent shape. I think I feel pretty grateful, really, that we've got a club with built on solid foundations, some exciting players, and I get to watch Etienne Capoue again. Who can complain about that?
You could complain about that.
Indeed,
sure.
I will.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Part of the Athletic Podcast Network. This is From the Rookery End.
So we're joined now by Adam Leventhal, the Athletics correspondent for Watford FC. Adam, good evening to you.
Good evening.
We've just watched the game, 1-0. And I suppose you've spent most of your day, another transfer window closing day for you, sort of trying to chase things and see what could and might not and what's going on with Watford players and where they might end up or not. And would you say, after everybody staying, it feels like, was it a quieter day than you expected?
It was a full day. Obviously, at the centre of it was Ismaïla Sarr. Was he going to go? Was he going to head to Crystal Palace? I got a sort of an inkling on Thursday evening that things were pretty much pretty much done, and it was going to be very, very difficult to extricate him from Watford on that final day. I mean, everyone would have realised pretty much, it's not rocket science, but you know, the squad were travelling to a game. A lot of the sort of the staff were going to be away. Yes, I know the hierarchy can be based at the training ground and they can do their business and all that sort of stuff and can head up for an evening game. But, you know, I think in general terms, when you've prepared a squad, you've told, you know, your head coach, you've got X amount of players or whatever, I think, you know, it's difficult for clubs to try and do business on deadline day. And I think that the feeling there was that, you know, this is a redundant day effectively, and unless you're going to come in with a massive bid that is game changing, then nothing's going to happen. And unfortunately for Crystal Palace, they didn't put in a particularly significant bid, and that was sort of dismissed initially. You know, £25 million, really? Okay, fine. Well, no, that's been dismissed. If you're not going to follow up, then fine, well, that's done. And it seemed to sort of be settled pretty early. So that was the sort of the main one. I suppose there was always, and we'd spoken about this before, there was always the chance that someone else might sort of wade in, you know, the likes of not necessarily Liverpool, but perhaps Manchester United. But it seemed as if that had sort of, you know, come and gone very, very quickly. At the times that they made their approaches, the structures of those deals didn't work out. And, you know, no one else really came in. Working alongside Dominic Fifield, my colleague at The Athletic, he also sort of brought up the issue of Wren, who'd earlier on in the window potentially sort of put in a bid to try and take Ismaïla Sarr back for their season in the Champions League, which I would have quite liked. I think that would have been quite a nice story, but I just don't think it really ever stacked up. And then obviously, you know, towards the end of the day, people were thinking, hang on a minute, where's Ismaïla Sarr? Why is he not in the squad? And it seems as if that there was some, I think, disappointment that he'd returned so late from training with Senegal. And, you know, I think it was basically weighed up that, okay, let's not stress too many players that have been out on international duty, especially when you've got so many games coming up. I think it's like 7 games in 23 days or whatever it is. So, yeah, they sort of pulled him out. And also Etienne Capoue, who we knew about, you know, a week ago or so, he wasn't playing, obviously, due to that ankle injury. And people were thinking, oh, here we go again. But no, you know, obviously he's around. And then it had all started at the beginning of the day with Troy Deeney, the fact that, you know, we were able to confirm that he was staying, which all in all, it made it, it wasn't a day where loads of things were happening, but it was more confirmation of you know, some good news, basically, wasn't it?
Very much good news, I think. And there was a lot of excitement for Watford fans. My question is, was there excitement at Watford in the club? I mean, you know, you listen and you read what Watford fans are saying, you know, well done, Gino. The image I had in my head was him stood at the gates of Vicarage Road with a lightsaber, batting away any Premier League club that coming his way. Stay away from my players, stay away. Was it that much of a battle for him, especially in this situation, this, you know, financial situation, the Premier League clubs as well as the EFL clubs find themselves in? Was it a hard thing for him to keep these players?
I think they were very sort of philosophical about, you know, certain players, Ismaïla Sarr being one of them. You know, they thought, well, look, if someone does come in with the requisite amount of money, you know, £40 to £50 million, then fine, we'll do business. That it makes sense. We'll make our money back. He will get a good move. It helps his reputation. It also helps the reputation of Watford Football Club as well, being a good springboard to, you know, a bigger team in the top six, hopefully. And then I think that's why the Crystal Palace deal never really, really appealed. Not to do a disservice to Crystal Palace, because they are, of course, a Premier League football club. They seem to always, you know, get themselves into a relatively safe position relatively early in a season. They've got good attacking players. Defensively, they're pretty sound. So, you know, it would have been a good option. And you know, I think that Sarr would have gone if the finances had been right. But I think it's probably a little bit more of a difficult sell, obviously, than going to Liverpool or Manchester United. So I don't think it was tough towards the end of the window, once the international window had closed, to sort of fend off the deals. I think it was just basically, you know, survival of the fittest, in a way that there wasn't going to be any teams that had the amount of money that Watford would have demanded, that were sort of putting their putting their offers in. So I think it was pretty straightforward in the end. Obviously, there were other issues, though, wasn't there?
I suppose the question, Adam, I want to know. I know you can't tell me because you can't read Gino's mind. But, you know, we expected lots
of... Who says I can't? Who says I can't?
Absolutely, sorry. I don't know if you, how you're...
I've got fed up this week with some of the accusations on social media. I seem to know exactly who I am, what I am, what I do, and how things go. Who says I can't read Gino's mind? For the record, I can't.
Okay.
Just for fact.
Disappointing, slightly, Adam. Disappointing. You know, the fact is that we expected... at least three of the players that stayed today to stay. I know that he's done some lovely business this week, I suppose, by getting rid of one on loan to Craig Dawson to West Ham. And what feels like good business to let Daryl Yammer and Danny Welbeck to be let go out of their contracts. Do you think, though, he sat there tonight with a alcoholic beverage in his hand, satisfied with the business he's done in terms of what he's got as a squad, but also financially?
I think that they will know that, you know, certain things conspired to make things a little bit tighter than they would have liked towards the end of the window, because I think they would have liked to have brought in a left back, but not being able to do some of the bigger deals, and included within that is Saar, included within that is Deulofeu, maybe getting sort of, I mean, not being disparaging because it's a lot of money, but sort of odds and sods millions for sort of Troy Deeney perhaps and Etienne Capoue in terms of transfer fees, you know, that could have all sort of added up. So the fact that those didn't happen contributed to meaning that towards the end of the window, they basically had to sell before they could bring in, you know, another player. So it was a little bit tight. But I think in the grand scheme of things, if you look at the business that they were able to do, you look at obviously the early sale of Decore, the combined sales of Estupiñan and Suarez. And if you lump all that together, that's around about 50 million quid. It's not bad business. And also, you know, we've spoken about it before, having that safety blanket of Udinese, being able to sort of plop Gerard Deulofeu over there for a little bit, and then you can still realise a, you know, an onward transfer fee for him at a later date, I think is obviously a good thing. And then you sort of boil it back down and you think, yes, we probably wanted to evolve the squad by moving the likes of Deeney on and Capoue on, and maybe we, you know, were thinking, yes, we might have to find another answer for Saar, but we could have reinvested some of that money. You've now got these players and you start to look at it and you go, yeah, we are in the Championship and we've got all these great players. And, you know, you look at the side that played against Derby, I think it's around about seven players out of that team that would expect to come back in and be starters, you know, Deeney, Saar, Capoue, Hughes, Gray, Messina. You know, Cathcart was on the bench because Truce De Kong started. So, you know, you've got incredible strength in depth. And you've also, overall, you've also made some shrewd signings as well. So you've, you know, you've brought back Ben Wilmot. You've got Jeremy Ngakia on a free whilst you've flung Craig Dawson the other way to West Ham. So, you know, that there's been some moves done, but I think that, you know, we have mentioned it before, doing the things with Danny Welbeck and Daryl Yammat, you know, that was basically trying to get them off the wage bill. And as I understand it, combined, they were on around about 100 grand a week. You know, Welbeck had 8 months left on his contract. Yammat, who hadn't played since last year, still had 2 years to go on his contract. So, you know, you're also future-proofing your budget as well. So, you know, it's been very, very tricky work over the course of a transfer window, which lasted, I think it was 82 days, and there were 22 deals, 16 out, 6 in, that had to be done. So, yes, fans can get annoyed about, oh, yeah, well, we didn't get him, or he should have gone, or whatever. But I've got a lot of sympathy for, you know, the hierarchy having to do all of this in such a tight space of time, I think.
Well, never mind fans being annoyed, Adam. I'm a little bit annoyed because you sound far too positive. And now I realise how you guys have been feeling with me being positive. And the question I've got for you, add, and it comes back to what you were saying earlier, just then, about how we've ended up with what is a very, very good squad. And you take the team that took to the field against Derby, and we could switch out six or seven of those players for upgrades, if you like, without being too disparaging to the side. So is there a concern perhaps at Watford that in this transfer window we have, as John said, sort of used the lightsaber to fend away the hordes after our best players for whatever reason? Is there a worry that the can has been kicked down the road a little bit? Because, of course, the transfer window opens again, horrifyingly, in 10 weeks' time. And if Ismaïla Sarr rips up the championship, if Etienne Capoue catches the eye, Will Hughes... Is there a danger that in January clubs will have had a bit of time to sort of reset, work out where they are in the pecking order, work out the sort of economic situation in football and the wider world, and come back in a little bit harder with firmer bids for some of those players? And then we find ourselves in a bit of a pickle, in as much as, you know, January is a very difficult time to do incoming business already, isn't it? So if some of those vultures... if taste buds are tingling come January, does that leave us in a tricky spot?
Well, I think everything you said is you know, it's spot on. Yes,
thank you.
I think
thank you for listening to from the rookery end. Yeah. We'll see you next
week.
All
the best. Yeah, come on, you horns.
No, I think yes, that could happen, but at the same time, the things that Watford would have done if they got the money in can also happen. Mm-hmm. So that's you know, that's the sort of the long and short of that situation. But as you mentioned there, yes, it's a difficult window to operate in because it is only 4 weeks long, which means it's difficult to buy players, but also you can be more defensive in terms of your arm, basically saying, no, look, we're not selling now. They've done it in the past. They don't usually sell big in January. I think probably the biggest one was Odi Ighalo, which was also ironically done on a deadline day as well, wasn't it? So, you know, I think that another thing that is part of the conversation in January is what sort of form the players are in, if they're enjoying life again, if, you know, if clubs are going to come in for them. Yes, there might be some big clubs, but, you know, often clubs that are buying in January are ones that haven't got the right answers in the Premier League, sure, who are, yeah, in the lower echelon of the division as well. So do they want to swap a fun time, you know, potentially winning promotion with Watford, a club that they know that they might have sort of reconnected with a little bit after the disappointments of last season? Or do they want to jump into a, you know, a relegation battle potentially in the Premier League? So there's also that to think about as well. So yes, yeah, it's only 10, 11 weeks away, and we're going to do it all again. But fingers crossed that they have, you know, at this point they've gone, look, right, come on, give me a... And you can do that easier in January, I think. The can has been kicked down the road a little bit, but that's just football, isn't it? You're always going from one window to the next.
Sure. Have you had any tweets yet, Matt, Adam, asking about transfer rumours for January?
not yet.
Okay, but it's only been a few hours.
Yeah, exactly. They'll come. But that's, do you know what I mean? That's the nature of the beast now, though, isn't it? And it really turns the screw on everyone involved. That, yeah, everyone's just thinking, oh well, we'll have the answer in January, or we'll have the answer in the summer. We've said this before, that the squad now needs to bed in, and we've got this beautiful sort of situation where nothing can happen really. Yes, we'll get injuries and all that sort of stuff, but we can just hone the squad that we've got. And Ivic, although he didn't get his left back, but they have got cover with Kiko, and they have got cover with Semmer as well. And they hopefully will get Messina back, who has actually got a left foot, which is helpful, like Semmer, to play on that side. You know, I think there'll be a sort of a sigh of relief now. Yes, you've got the win, but you can also just concentrate on only these players. And if you want to be with me, you know, it's my way or the highway, because we're hopefully heading in one direction.
And they're great players. This is a really, really solid, decent squad. We've said it earlier, there's talent from front to back. And I think we've come out the back of this window. It's felt never-ending. It's felt exhausting. It's felt depressing in some ways, confusing in others. But we've come out of it, I think, as football fans, we can be hopeful. As Watford football fans, we can be hopeful of what this squad can deliver. And I think we need to be thankful for the owners and the club for delivering that. It's now over to Ivic and the players to show what they can do. But I think there is every cause for optimism. The game tonight wasn't the most, it wasn't going to win a footballing Oscar, whatever the equivalent of that is. Any suggestions to at Watford Podcast on your socials? It's not going to win any awards for best dressed football, whatever. But we're with a chance, I think, as it stands, of having a really good, solid, successful season. And that's all we can ask for as Watford supporters of a relegated team, let's not forget, treading a tightrope of difficult times on and off the pitch. And I, for one, am really, really enthused. And now I'm going to have a good night's kip tonight. And I think the season starts now. And I think the season starts now with a solid squad, an exciting squad, a manager who I think can do good things. So bring it on. Bring it on.
Well, it's definitely bringing it on, because even though it is 10 weeks, that does seem like a short amount of time before the next window. There's a lot of football to be played between now and then. So Vlad has got plenty of tweaking and building and harmonizing. Yeah. Harmonizing.
We did that. We almost said that at the same time.
Harmonizing.
I don't think we're making it through to the next round. Thank you so much, Mike.
You're more than welcome. Well done, Watford. Well done, everyone. Let's go.
And well done, Adam, on probably a very busy few weeks. Have a good rest this weekend.
I will. Thanks, gents. Have a lovely weekend.
Thank you, Jason, as well. And thank you for listening. Do follow us on all our social media at Watford Podcast on Instagram, Twitter and Facebook. And we'll be back with another podcast after Watford take on the mighty Blackburn Rovers on Wednesday night. Come on, you all!